Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to another episode of On the Continent, your one-stop shop for everything to do with European football. I'm Dotton Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Lassie Watson.
Today's show is a land of the giants of European football. The mighty Juve, shaken, stirred and humiliated by Unai Emery's Villarreal, also in the battle of the somewhat failed legends of European football. Did Ajax fall left hook, line and sinker for Benfica's rope-a-dope? And never mind their league success, PSG's ultras have fallen out of love with Messi and Neymar for their Champions League exit. Let's start off with the mighty Juve. Mighty, I say. They were, according to our producer, Charlie, they were mugged by Villarreal. I think that's a fair assessment, isn't it?
Yeah, well, they started the game well, but they were picked off by an Unai Emery team doing exactly what you would expect an Unai Emery team to do. And we spoke on the Ramble earlier this week before the second leg about how it might turn out, and we recognised that Juventus were favourites, but Emery spoke after the first leg about how the experience of his team had made a massive difference, and I agree with that. I think you look at Villarreal and you think, bright, young, plucky in their yellow strip. They're not. They're quite an old side. They do have some very, very good young players led by Jeremy Pino, Samuel Chukwueze, who, you know, they've not been playing all the time for one reason or another, injury and Emery's choices. We'll come to Emery in a bit. But I think the fact that Villarreal, this current set of players, have been there, done it and got the T-shirt made a massive difference, especially as the game went on. Now,
been there and done it and got the T-shirt in the Europa League?
Yes, but in European football, because Juventus are now in a cycle of repeated failure in the Champions League. You can't get away from that. You look at the last four exits from the Champions League, all at home against Ajax, against Lyon, against Villarreal, and against Porto last season. Now, when Andrea Agnelli is looking into the bright future of his Super League, and, you know, we're not going to just go on about this from a Schadenfreude perspective, although there needs to be a little bit of that, I think. The fact that a man who thinks that his team are too good for the Champions League, it turns out that they're really not good enough for the Champions League. The huge irony in his avowed stance is the fact that they're not just being knocked out of Europe at an earlier stage than that they would want to be. They're being knocked out by teams of a level and teams from leagues, when we go back to France, Portugal and the Netherlands, that he doesn't think should be rubbing shoulders with his club, which is remarkable, really. Now, Lars, I know that you look at this Juventus side and you think that, and you think that, well, let's be fair. We can all say since January, Dusan Vlahovic has papered over some cracks. But this is a Juventus side which is under construction, right?
Yeah, I think there are two separate levels to this story, right? And you've touched upon both of them. First of all, I think they're almost completely separate as well. I think it's the fun of Andrea Agnelli's Juventus being dumped out again by one of those teams who he thinks is beneath them, really, playing. And we can say that because they weren't invited to his little sort of...
How do you say Schadenfreude in Norwegian?
Schadenfreude. I almost said a bad word. One of the teams that that Juventus shouldn't have to sully themselves by playing against they shouldn't sully their shirts with the sweat of the great unwashed, that the Champions League is forcing them to do, which is very upsetting for Mr. Agnelli. So he suggested the Super League thing and it got shot down. And for the fourth year running, they've been, that is objectively funny. But having said that, he's getting a lot of stick, Agnelli, but I thought this game was a real vindication for one of his other schemes, which is he suggested we should try to sell subscriptions for only the last 15 minutes of games. I must say, definitely the last 15 minutes of this game was my favourite part of it. I think he might be onto something there, Agnelli.
It's based on that NBA thing of like being able to buy the last 5 minutes of a game, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But also, the specific example he gave when he suggested it was, and I quote, "If you take golf, if it's interesting at all, it's only the last..." I did get golf there, by the way. "If it's interesting at all, it's only the last six holes of the final day. You're not going to watch the whole thing on TV unless you're a hardcore fan." But it's just really stupid because, it belays a fundamental misunderstanding of what the game of football is, which is pretty crazy to me.
That's before we get into him and Florentino Perez, the ridiculousness of them telling young people,
fellow children,
what they like. Exactly. That, they are Poochie off The Simpsons, basically. There's something that they think is representing the youth, but they have no idea how young people look at or perceive football, which is ridiculous. And it's also ridiculous because, as you say, his team were a bit green at the moment. And when we talk about Dotton, about them being mugged by Villarreal, the bit where Juventus concede the opener to the Gerard Moreno penalty, they panic. They totally panic. And that affects how the rest of the game folds out.
It's funny that you say that because I'll come to you in just a second, Lars. It's funny that you say it like that because you could argue the first half, they played quite scintillating without the panic.
Yeah.
What happened? Why did they panic at that point?
Well, I think the enormity of the occasion is part of it, and there's stress at the club, and as Lars has said before, quite rightly, when they bought Cristiano Ronaldo to push them over the top in Champions League terms, which obviously didn't work at all, they betrayed the amount of anxiety that they have to go on and win this competition. And funnily enough, Leonardo, who I wouldn't take to quoting that often, the sporting director of Paris Saint-Germain, when they went out to Manchester City and they were totally outclassed in the majority of the second leg of that Paris Saint-Germain, he said, well, there's no point overreacting to this because we've got to a final and a semi-final of the Champions League in the last 2 years. And that's about right. You know, you need a bit of circumstance, a bit of luck and all that sort of stuff to push you over the top. That's the most sensible thing that I've ever heard Leonardo say. And yeah, obviously it doesn't completely tally with the planning or that thereof. You know, maybe we'll talk about that, the PSG side of it, a bit later. But in terms of Juventus, Vlahovic is just their next god that they're going to build around. And you look at where they were before, where what they did under Conte was such a collective triumph. The opening of the Allegri period in charge is a collective triumph as well. You know, they have a culture, they have a way of doing things, and through that Allegri gets them to two Champions League finals in 3 years. But then they decide to build around an individual in Cristiano Ronaldo, going back on a promise to build around Dybala. They promised to, we want to make you our Francesco Totti, and now they're going to lose him for nothing this summer. They seem to have fallen out with the idea of that. And now they're just going to build around another single guy in Vlahovic. And last, how can they paper over these cracks when the squad is in just such a weird place? I mean, we've talked again about how the Cristiano Ronaldo salary stopped them from rebuilding. But actually, it's not just that, is it? Because when they signed all these players on freeze, and Adrian Rabiot is the obvious one of the current lot. Free is always in inverted commas because it's such expensive deals. Aaron Ramsey being another one. They're lumbered with all these albatross contracts,
yep,
that you can't get rid of. So having Ronaldo leave has helped, but it hasn't solved everything.
Well, no, and I just realized I completely sidetracked myself with the point I was making earlier. That there are two levels to this. On the first, there is, let's all laugh at Andrea Agnelli, and I think we should, because I think he's earned it. But the second level is, where is this team actually now? And as you've said, Andy, that they are in a transitional phase. They have started sort of chugging along and winning games in Serie A. Mm. But as, you know, Nicky Bandini of this parish has said, they're sometimes borderline unwatchable as they're doing it, because they're not good yet. Mm. And that is the point they are in their development. And so getting done by a well-organized Unai Emery team, that can happen. Like, that's not actually a scandalous result, I don't think, if we ignore everything else and the fact that it's Juventus. And I do think, yeah, there's a cleanup job to be done here. I think, where should Juventus be? What should we expect from Juventus in 2022-2023 going forward? Like, surely the bar for them is set at being among the best teams in Europe. You know, they're as much as they've kind of fallen away a bit this season in the league, they are the wealthiest team in Italy. They're run by a very wealthy family who can afford to fund them to some extent. You know, they should be looking at, like, Liverpool, Man City and Bayern, that sort of realm of teams, yeah, and say, this is where we should be. They are really far away from that. And I definitely think they should start looking at, you know, if you look at these teams that have dominated in the highest level in European football in modern times, they're very strong collectives. This sort of idea of chucking a few stars at it and we'll just sort of defend and let the big man do the thing, that isn't really what gets you there anymore.
I know that we've concentrated so far on the mugging from the mug's point of view.
You want to talk about the mugger, not the muggy?
Yeah.
Well, it's a weird way of talking about it. But
God,
yeah,
damn it, Andy, I was
because,
about to say that.
Well, Jack has sent us a tweet, and we always welcome your tweets.
You got there early, you won the 50-50.
He did. But we always welcome your tweets at Football Ramble, at Dotton Adebayo, at Lars Severston, yeah, Lars, that's how I describe his name, and at Andy Brassel. But Jack's tweet is Emery actually one of the best managers in Europe. I don't know if Jack is an Arsenal fan or not. Lars first.
I think he is a very good manager at certain things. And I always push back against this idea that this is binary, that managers are either good or bad, or that you can rate them on like a scale from 1 to 20. Like all people, they're good at certain things and suitable for certain environments and less good at other things and less suitable for other environments. And I think there's a very specific thing with Unai Emery, which I'd like to bring up, which is the language issue. Because God bless him, his English is better than my Spanish. Let's just get that out there. And he made a really good go at speaking English when he was at Arsenal, and that is laudable, but it's also, it can't be denied that he was having issues getting his points across, and that's something that came out in the aftermath of his firing. You know, whenever a manager leaves his post, you get all these the inside story of where it all went wrong, which is where everyone's contacts, you know, tell people the stories that they couldn't tell before.
And the subtitle, it was the manager's fault.
Well, yeah. but you get interesting details in those pieces, and one, a recurring theme in the sort of post-Arsenal coverage of Emery was that he really had issues communicating and getting his points across in meetings and this sort of thing. And I think for someone like him, who's a really detailed, oriented manager, you know, really long video analysis sessions, very detailed tactical instructions, if you're having issues getting your point across, that is a huge problem.
I would have thought if you're having issues getting your point across, bring in an interpreter, you know, that would be the obvious one. And they often say, don't they, Andy, that football needs no interpretation. It speaks for itself. You can have somebody who can't speak a word of the language, but he gets it. He gets what you want because that's football.
I mean, he's someone who prides himself on good communication. So whether he would have allowed himself to do that, I think is maybe another question. Because he's someone who, at PSG and at Arsenal, made a tremendous effort to communicate and to connect with people. That he lost the nuance is definitely a thing. I think as well, you talked about the situation. I don't think you have to be so nuanced in your instructions to players of the sort of age and calibre that they have. I think that there are players who, you look at Gerard Moreno, Etienne Capoue, Raul Albiol, they're players who get it anyway. I don't think you need to walk them through everything, which is a definite thing.
I suspect Unai Emery does, though.
I'm sure he does, at least partially. But I think when you look at what they've done this season, they were receiving criticism at the start of the season, and people were talking about him having a difficult second season there following up the Europa League win in the Champions League. But I said at the time, the difference was very, very fine in that last season when they'd lost one competitive game before Christmas, they were drawing a lot of games. Now, they were drawing a lot of games in the first half of this season when, of course, there was the speculation linking in with a move to Newcastle, but they weren't winning as many of those games on the other side because they were lacking all their front players. They had a load of injuries up front. Moreno gets fit. Chukwueze gets fit. Hey, presto, they're away again. And I think that really makes the difference. And you look at the players they have in the final third of the pitch, they're really, really primed to pick off Juventus once they do get that little sniff of blood. And you know, you talked about, Jack, about the best managers in Europe. I would say Emery's possibly a little bit below that because he's a little bit below elite because he's simply not adventurous enough and he does have a way of doing things.
He keeps winning the Europa League.
But then again, the Europa League.
Yeah, but
rather than the Champions League. Whereas I would say, if we're talking about the best in Europe, Gerard Moreno's up there.
Yeah.
He's just so skilled, not just a great goal scorer, but just a great forward-thinking interpreter. If we're talking about interpreters, he is someone who explains everything to his teammates in great clarity with the way he plays.
And I think it was, might have been last time I was on this pod, actually, I was sort of bringing up my sort of affection for Dani Parejo as just being one of those players in La Liga who's never really gotten the attention because he's not played for one of the biggest teams.
He's having a moment, isn't he?
He's just a really good player, and there are a few of those, him and Moreno as well, Villarreal. They're a good team, but I don't think on Unai Emery, like, there's a reason why he's been in something like eight major European finals already in his career. He is, whatever flaws he has as a coach, he is very good at setting up a team for these sort of one-off knockout games. He gets that right more often than not. And they're not always swashbuckling to watch, but they're a really awkward team to play against in these games. And they handle this very well. And I know this wasn't a knockout game, but you can take it back to the victory over Atalanta in the group stage in Bergamo, the game they got snowed off initially and then played the next day. Like, again, Atalanta, a much more fun team to watch than Villarreal, you know, really sort of flowing, attacking football. You know, Villarreal just sat back and soaked it up and did them on the counter.
Yeah. That is the mugging, isn't it?
And it was just beautiful.
And don't try this at home, folks, but that is how you mug somebody.
From a tactical point of view, it was just beautifully executed. Even though, like, as a neutral, as a paying punter, I'd probably go see Atalanta before I go see Villarreal. But in terms of, like, going far in these competitions, the ability to do that certainly is a factor, I think.
Guanya la línia a fons, centrada a l'interior de l'àrea, gol. Remata amb el cap Jeremy i fa el primer. Un jugador molt més menut que Sergi Gómez i que Cabrera, tot sol, ha rematat de cap. Jo no ho acabo d'entendre.
Of course, there was another cracking match. I thought this was a battle of two historically legendary clubs, Ajax versus Benfica. It was a hard one to call initially, but then it turned out to be, at the end of the day, not another mugging. I wouldn't describe it like that, but it did.
It wasn't that far off, was it?
It wasn't far off, but I preferred the dope rope that Ali performed on George Foreman, because you soak up a lot of the opposition. You make them think that they're on the ascendancy, and then when they're almost knackered, you pull out your blow.
You know what? I think that Ali Foreman comparison is a really, really good one. Because I think, like Ali, Benfica set themselves that we're going to be under the pump for a long part of this. Mm-hmm. You know, that they readied themselves for punishment. And they kind of had a template for this as well. I think we might have mentioned it before, but if you go back to the start of their European season, of course, because they finished third in the Portuguese Liga, they're going to finish third in the Portuguese Liga this season, so they're going to have to go through the same thing again when it comes to July, August. If you go to the playoff round, you get a very hard-fought win over Ajax's domestic rivals and title rivals. It's still a good title race in the Eredivisie. PSV, they get a very hard fought win over them in Lisbon. And then they go away to Eindhoven for the return. They get their best defender, Lucas Verissimo, who's since been injured and is out for the season, sent off in the first half. And you think, shit, they've got an issue here. But the collective defensive effort for a team that is built to attack, and a team that through successive coaches has been built to attack since Jorge Jesus first arrived in 2009, for them to find the collective strength to defend like this was really impressive. But they had to go through it as well. Because really, you know, Lars was talking about Villarreal being so well set to counterpunch. On paper, Benfica should be like this as well. You look at Darwin Núñez, who can... He's great number nine, can hold the ball up, can run the channels as well. You've got a playmaker in Rafa who's got so much pace, who can get past that last man as well. But those chances don't really come. And I think part of that is because they're so maxed out keeping Ajax out, and they do a great collective job, they actually don't have the energy to counterattack for lots of this. Now, Benfica have two real chances in this, which are both set pieces. There's the Vertonghen one where he gets free and should make a better job of it, and there's the one that Darwin actually does score. But I think because they've got that siege template that they've got from their last visit to the Netherlands, when they put one over especially at the time, it's a very, very good PSV side. Again, very adventurous, very exciting to watch. I think they've got something to work from, even though they had a different coach then. And this is talking about Nelson Verissimo, the erstwhile assistant to Jorge Jesus, who's now in charge of Benfica for the rest of the season. It's the ultimate feather in his cap, because to get them to the quarterfinals is amazing, especially after the season they've had. And especially because Amsterdam, because Benfica won the European Cup there back in the early 60s. It's got such an enormous historical resonance to them as a city. Like you said, we talk about Benfica and Ajax as two great European names, but Amsterdam is a special place for Benfica.
Well, it is now, I suppose, Lars, because the Ajax did try their best to undo Benfica initially, but Benfica, you may as well have thought that this was a home match for them. They didn't seem to have any of the, you know, wobbles of a team that is facing the opposition. Interesting that both of the Champions League's last 16 matches that we're talking about were won by the away team.
Yeah, it's been a blow for all those early hot takes about how there will never be any away goals anymore now that the away goal rules... I remember these things. Remember that these were good times, Andy. You know, the first game between PSG and Real Madrid, right? Real Madrid set out quite defensively, and we had this whole cadre of weirdos on the internet who was like, "Well, this means with no away goals, no one will attack anymore away from home." It's like, well,
Mourinho's on the way back.
No, it means that Carlo Ancelotti is not a moron and isn't going to go gung ho away when you're playing against Kylian Mbappe. That's what that means. Anyway, yes, away goals still being scored. I didn't. Can I be controversial and say I didn't think this was a great game? I was kind of looking forward.
I think
forward.
That's fair to say.
I was kind of looking forward. I was double screening this a long time with the other one, and it was one of those where I kind of wanted this to be fun in the way the first leg was. The first leg was amazing, like in terms of just end-to-end chaos. Mm. But this was not great. But I guess that is credit to Benfica. Like the fact that Ajax weren't really able to do their thing. Ajax not at their best here at all and didn't create that many good chances really, even though they had quite a lot of possession. And I guess that is credit to Benfica. And it's just one of those things that, I mean, it's been a funny old couple of years in the world. A lot of things we didn't think would happen has happened. Certainly one of the things we did not expect a few years ago was that we'd be talking about a double pivot of Julian Weigl and Adel Taarabt shutting out a magnificent Ajax team in the knockout stages of the Champions League.
I've looked at Weigl a lot, and I think it's funny. You look at his career has obviously not turned out quite as he would have hoped or expected when he was linked to Manchester City and Barcelona, etc., etc. Borussia Dortmund really need that kind of midfielder at the moment. If I was them, I would try and buy him back.
And playing football with Adel Taarabt, he's living the best of all lives.
Oh yeah, he's having a wonderful
time.
Come on, I don't have any doubt about that. But just from I guess him. Like maximizing his potential, kind of perspective. I don't know. From the Ajax side is funny, isn't it? Because we've looked at this team a lot, and especially as they were firing through the group stages, we were all saying, "Well, is this an even better team than they had in 2019?" And of course, the thing from 2019 and that incredible run in the knockout stages, where they get past Real Madrid and Juventus, and they nearly get past Spurs. It's they can't get it right at home.
Mm.
And you look now, and they've not won a knockout game in the Champions League at home since 1997.
That is shocking. Mm.
It's shocking.
I was actually not aware of that. Good Lord, Andy.
It's shocking for a recent semi-finalist. Mm. And it was funny because I think we looked at it. I looked at it in the group stages and thought, well, actually, maybe because this team's got a bit more experience in it now because, you know, Tadic is still there and Haller's still there and you have Daley Blind. Maybe this is a slightly more mature team and they can handle the occasion because it's really atmospheric in the Johan Cruyff Arena. And there was a sense that the young team of 2019 found it a little bit much. And maybe they found a little bit more liberty on the road. But actually, they choked again, like Lars was saying. And, you know, I think if you go back to since they got to that Champions League semi-final, you know, you look at them getting knocked out of Europe... with games in Amsterdam against Getafe and Valencia, not absolute top-level elite opposition. And with all due respect to Benfica, you have to say that they fall in that category as well, particularly the way they're playing this season.
Yeah, and I think if we are comparing it to that last great Ajax team, I would stand by the assessment that this is very good and could match them in a lot of ways, but I guess one of the things that's kind of missing is there's no midfield passer in the way Frankie de Jong was. I mean, there's no one who can really move the ball like he can and find space and dictate things. Gravenbach is going to be a great midfielder, don't get me wrong, but he's still quite young and a little bit rough around the edges. You know, Alvarez is a very sort of steadying defensive character there.
You know, the Gravenbach...
Berg, who is fine, but you know, this compared to the breakout season, Frankie de Jong is not the same.
The Gravenbach thing that you were just saying, your description of him is pretty much top scout's description of him at the moment.
Ooh.
In the we know he's available.
Yeah.
We like him. We're not prepared to bet the farm on it.
No.
On him. Whereas there was like unanimous opinion on Frankie de Jong, wasn't there? Who, might be dispensable for Barcelona. Of course, but they're very different sorts of players.
I mean, he's clearly... I mean, I'm not going to go off on a tangent here, but like he's... The only reason he's not established as one of the best midfielders in the world right now is that he's joined to a total dumpster fire of a club and just hasn't really found his place there yet.
Mm.
You know, he's still... don't worry about him. He's very good.
Yeah.
But I think with Gravenbach, I would quite like to see him go to somewhere like Bayern where he goes into an environment where, you know, they can bet some money on him, they can afford it, and he has a lot of good role models around him, and he doesn't have to perform every single week. Like, there's good players around him who can... You know, that'd be good to see, but he's surely very talented. So I'm not just saying that, but looking at this team, this is the kind of thing that I felt was lacking a little bit in this game, because they had a lot of ball and they created some chances, but someone who can really find the openings in the way that Frankie de Jong can, maybe they didn't quite have.
Yeah, although Ben has sent us a tweet asking whether we should be considering the coaching from the Ajax point of view, and ask, has Ten Hag been found out? Or is this Ajax side just not good enough to be in this last 16 of the Champions League?
I think there's enormous overachievement for them in the group stages and in 2019. So I think this is not exactly a knock on Ten Hag. And yeah, I think you could argue that, you know, maybe they tactically fell short a little bit. And maybe that's happened before. If we go back and we're being extremely harsh, saying that second leg with Tottenham in 2019, I think you have to realise with Ten Hag, he's a very, very good coach. They have been through a lot off the pitch in the last couple of months. Ajax, of course, Mark Overmars, the sporting director, who Ten Hag was very close for, left in disgrace. And the way that the club dealt with that, well, is questionable. And now, of course, none of this pales in comparison to the victims of his harassment. It's not the most important thing. But in terms of what it's done for Ajax, it's shaken the foundations of the club a little bit. And Ten Hag needs that support network behind him. When people talk about him as a potential Manchester United coach, I don't think there's the football infrastructure there to really give him the help he needs at the moment. And say if you were talking just off the top of your head, and a lot of people think it will be a runoff between, say, Ten Hag and Pochettino. Pochettino has got experience of being the manager, you know, the English-style manager, which Ten Hag doesn't. So without Manchester United completely reforming the way they do things, Pochettino, for me, would be the better bet. For example, that's not to say Ten Hag isn't a really good coach. I think he is a really good coach, and of course, he succeeded in Germany with Bayern as well. But yeah, he does need the right partner as a sporting director, I think.
How much, Lars, does Ten Hag's cachet suffer from a defeat like this?
Almost not at all would be my feeling, really. But I mean, I did hear one pundit say, like, oh, can United have a manager who's just been lost to Benfica, which is like just intergalactically stupid. It's like, I mean, United have been knocked out of the group stage by Benfica when Sir Alex Ferguson was in charge. Yeah, it happens. But also, as much as we're praising Unai Emery for getting these one-off games right, I think it is very harsh to judge someone from this tie against Benfica, where they had huge chances in the first leg and should really have been a couple of goals up from the first leg on the balance of play, I thought. My concerns with Ten Hag would be, I think we've seen it a few times, and it's kind of maybe slightly unfair on him, but at Ajax, you're in this sort of incredibly clearly defined system. You know, all the kids who come through have been playing, you know, to the general principles, you know, since they were toddlers, basically. I'm exaggerating, but you know what I mean? They have a scouting system who know exactly which qualities to work from, because there is this general idea of how Ajax should play. So the players who come in from outside, you know, they have roughly the qualities that you'll need. So it's all really set up to go in the same direction. And if Erik Haag hypothetically goes to Man United, right, he's taking over a team who, let's face it, has not been playing Ajax football since they were 12. You know, these players, it's completely different. You're kind of taking, and we see this with these sort of Ajax coaches when they're sort of taken out of Ajax and released into the wild and have to sort of fend for themselves. It doesn't always go very well because you don't have that sort of background. And that's something that would... Again, it's harsh on him because he's, I'm sure, an incredibly intelligent guy and maybe it'll be fine. But if I was looking to appoint a manager, it's something that would be on my mind at least.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to Eureka, the show that gets under the skin of science, in a good way. I'm Rick Edwards.
And I'm Dr. Michael Brooks.
Not the kind of doctor who'd be able to help much if you're having like a heart attack. But if you're wondering about quantum physics or the theory of matter, he's your man.
Well, probably.
Every week we're asking a new, puzzling question from the world of science and discovering the answer with the help of a world-leading expert.
Like, will we ever talk to animals?
They are definitely talking. You know, that's, again, a word that I would qualify because we usually mean that vocally. But in their own ways, they're talking to us every single day.
Are face transplants the future of cosmetic surgery?
Given that range of what's considered attractive, there's probably no point wanting to change your face to be more attractive if you follow science. And should we fear an alien invasion?
If an imperialistic drive brings other civilizations to us, then obviously it's not good news. But if it's scientific exploration, it may be good news.
If you're interested in learning a little bit more about the weird, magnificent world around us, then this is the show for you. Eureka. Subscribe now and find us on Twitter at EurekaPod. New episodes every Wednesday.
Eureka is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Let's talk about the fallout from not advancing in the Champions League. Messi And Neymar.
It's a messy situation.
Well, this is surprising because, you know, you don't think Messi and Neymar will get the stick from their own fans, but they have been, haven't they?
Yeah, and from the moment they went out of the Champions League, you knew something was going
to
happen.
But it was to Real Madrid. Be realistic.
Yeah,
now.
But
it was one of the most embarrassing things I've seen on TV in a while.
You watch Celebrity Love Island, do you?
I did not.
Anyway, I think that the thing is, because of, you know, you could go out of the Champions League, but it was the manner. And, you know, we discussed that last week, but from the moment they went out, you knew the fans were going to do something, the ultras were going to do something, and they made it clear they would. Sunday lunchtime kickoff against Bordeaux, it was my game of the week last week, precisely for this reason, in actual fact. But the amount of personal pushback against Messi and Neymar was perhaps a little unprecedented. They were booed before the match, they're booed when they're on the ball during the match.
By their own fans.
And of course, this was while they were winning, by the way, quite comfortably against a Bordeaux side who were utterly rubbish and in genuine danger of relegation, but that's another story. I guess because Messi arrived to such fanfare, him, his entourage, and people from back home in Argentina, people he's played with, former teammates at Barcelona, they're all a bit. We had Cesc Fabregas sticking up for him on Twitter, didn't we? Mm. Sort of saying, come on, man, have some respect. But what you've got to understand is it's not just on Neymar and Messi. It's not just them being booed for their personal contributions. It's what they represent.
Exactly.
It's the fact that they represent this star above team culture. And for what it's worth, and I think the whole, you know, the ultras put out this incredible statement last week, which questioned the whole culture of the club. It questioned the way that Nasser Al-Khelaifi runs it, the president. So he's under pressure, as well as Leonardo, the sporting director, who we've been expecting to go for a while. But I think that, you know, there has to be some personal responsibility for Messi and Neymar as well. I mean, people have a certain view of Neymar, which we're all clear on already. But I think with Messi, we think of him as, you know, football's Peter Perfect. But he came into the season, as we've said before on numerous occasions, at a massive disadvantage in that he came into a physical league, which he has struggled in so far because it is so physical, without a pre-season, which is not great for any footballer, and particularly not one who's heading into his mid-30s and changing leagues. And, of course, he went home for Christmas when, one would argue, if he was genuinely conscientious and genuinely fully bought into the PSG project, stay in Paris or at least go somewhere and do a warm weather training camp, get your pre-season in the winter break. You owe it to the club. You're their star player. You signed for a fortune. You're meant to be running things. Put in the bloody effort rather than going back to Argentina.
You're sounding like an ultra.
Having a party and getting coronavirus.
Yeah.
Which is what he did. And that would piss me off. And of course, the problem is, it comes back to the culture of the club, Lars, because neither Pochettino nor Al-Khelaifi or Leonardo were in a position to crack the whip and make him do it. Because of the culture they've created.
So it brings me to mind, I saw some very salient quotes from Nasser Al-Khelaifi, who said, you know, I'm quoting here, the players will have to be more responsible than before. It must be completely different. They'll have to do more and work harder. They're not there for their own amusement. If they do not agree, the doors are open. Ciao. I do not want star behavior. I do not want star.
It really isn't.
I do not want star behavior anytime. You know when he said this? The summer of 2019.
Yes.
I kind of want to bring this back to, how's it going, Nasser? Is it, do you feel like you've really followed up on these threats? Do you feel like you've stamped out star behavior at this football club that you run? I feel like you haven't, man.
Actively nurtured.
But then why aren't the ultras? I know you say that Neymar, Messi are representative of their star over club culture. I get that part. But ultimately, booing them doesn't change the issue. It's the culture.
You're showing it's your disgruntlement.
It's making the club understand we reject this individual culture.
And also, this isn't necessarily on Messi because he didn't make the decision. Well, he did make the decision to come there, but he didn't make the decision to bring him in. As much as he's great, he's totally the wrong signing for them from the beginning. It doesn't make any sense. And we've said this pretty consistently on this podcast this year. A front line of him, Neymar, and Mbappe makes no sense. It is like someone going, well, you know, I think steak is really nice, and I also like ice cream, and I really like champagne. So you put those three things into a blender, going bzzz, and then glug, 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 this is terrible. How can this happen? I've put really good things into a blender.
Isn't that because PSG went through this cultural sort of comparison with Real Madrid's Galactico periods where, you know, the stars, doesn't matter if they fit in or not. Isn't that it, really?
Maybe. I think you could make that comparison certainly to the first Galactico era.
Though I would argue that if you look at the players they actually brought in, it wasn't nearly as much of a mismatch as this. If you compare it, I think that you're being very mean to the Galactico era Real Madrid.
And they, of course, those players were the very best. The other thing is, the reason why the Galactico period, the first Galactico period, particularly at Real Madrid, worked at least to a certain extent, it certainly worked in terms of European Cups, is because I remember Emilio Butragueño saying to me, the thing is, what we need this balance. If we have Beckham and Figo and Zidane, we also need Real Bravo and local guys, because they are the ones who get the essence of the club. Now, obviously, what he's leaving out there is basically it's financially expedient. If you're paying someone $6 million a year, if someone else in the same dressing room will take $150,000 a year, that is great for us. And that is what makes it all financially work. However, there is a germ of truth in that, because what PSG have done, and part of what's pissed the fans off so much, is they have made a conscious effort in the last couple of years to basically move away from the players produced by the club, or produced by, you know, one of the most prolific regions in Europe, really, before you even get to Clairefontaine, of Paris and the Ile-de-France region. But actually, they've made a decision in the last couple of years to turn their back on Nkunku, to turn their back on Moussa Diaby.
You players, won the 50-50 again, Andy.
Players who God's become... Sake. But the thing is, it's not just the fact that they have chosen to use those players as collateral rather than use them in the squad. They have basically said to all those generations of future PSG players from Paris, you ain't getting in the team here. And it's really hard to rebuild that trust. How can they do that? How can they do that 180? Because if I was a quality young Parisian player, I would be thinking, why don't I just go somewhere else where I actually play?
Yeah, I was going to... That's why I was joking about you gotten in there. I was going to say, and I planned to say this coming into the studio today, one of the most humiliating things for PSG this season is the season Christopher Nkunku is having in Germany.
Yeah,
if
yeah,
you look at
totally.
What does this PSG team needs, you're overburdened with stars, you have a front line, doesn't make any sense at all. You need a quick and bright forward player who can go past people and who also puts a shift in, who also makes an effort, who can be used in a pressing system. Nkunku is right there, and you had him. But you were too impatient, and you wouldn't give him time to develop, and now here you are. And it's just really weird to me. If you own a football club in Paris and you have basically limitless funds, I don't understand how your first priority isn't to try to make sure you have the best academy in the world, because you have probably one of the most productive regions on the planet in terms of producing football talent. Why isn't this your number one priority? Why isn't making sure the academy is funded, but also, like you say, there's a clear pathway to the first team and you are going to give people... Because you can, because you're so dominant in this league that you can totally have one or two youngsters in every single game and you will still probably win the league, right? There's no risk there.
Let me throw in this quick tweet from Ron. It only needs a one-word answer or a three-letter answer. Which European club would you guys say is most crippled by internal politics?
I still think Barcelona have got an issue.
There you go.
I just remember talking about being crippled by internal politics. I know we just spoke about them, but it's hard to get past PSG because it's a club where the coach can't make the decisions he wants to because of non-footballing factors.
Yeah.
He can't tell the players to do... I mean, Miguel Delaney of this parish wrote a great sort of post-mortem on PSG, but one of the little nuggets was that a former PSG manager, who Miguel very tactfully allowed to remain anonymous, you know, once presented the players with a very sort of detailed setup for how they were going to approach a crunch Champions League match. You know, who's pressing where, who's running where. And the immediate feedback from one of the players was, do we have to run this much? It's like, this is the club we're talking about, right? And you bring in Pochettino. Pochettino's always been a total mismatch for this. Like, it doesn't make any sense. But again, Pochettino wants, Pochettino probably wants to bench at least one, maybe two of these stars to get, but he can't. And you can't make the signing because of, again, they want the stars.
His ideal player's already left, basically.
And just fundamentally, like, putting together a front three of Mbappe, Neymar and Messi, you only do that if you fundamentally don't understand football.
Okay, give Lodge three letters and he takes
bad.
The whole alphabet, including those extra three letters in Norwegian.
Bad.
Yeah, indeed. So, Andy, you're on a roll. You gave us a cracking game of the week last week to keep our eye on, and it delivered, to be frank, in terms of PSG at least. What are you going to offer for us this week?
There's a big game Sunday night. It's not the game that you think. It's more of, I guess, an amuse-bouche. Half past
what?
Six on Sunday night, Borussia Dortmund are going to FC Köln, which is incredibly atmospheric at the best of times. Köln have really improved this season. They've been great, mostly off the back of their terrific coach, Steffen Baumgart, and also Anthony Modeste having this incredible career revival. Now, Dortmund won their game in hand during the week at Mainz. Ugly old win with a bundled-in winner, appropriately, by Axel Witsel near the end. They are only 4 points.
It all counts, you know.
Oh, it does. And they're only 4 points behind Bayern all of a sudden. And the way that Dortmund have played over the last month and the way that Bayern have played over the last month, you're like, what? How has this happened? And obviously, having shortened the gap, they'll manage to find a way to make it larger this weekend. But just let's believe in a title race while we can. Let's see if Dortmund can go there and get a result. And of course, Erling Haaland is back.
I think people in North London will know what you mean. Was it, what? How has this happened? On both sides of the North London divide. What are you going to eat with it, though? Something German?
I think maybe I fancy... it is Sunday night. I think some sort of roast with kartoffel.
Not sauerkraut?
I think that could be the way. I never say no to a bit of sauerkraut.
Well, there you go. What about you, Lush?
Listen, I'm going to be Captain Obvious here. It is the El Clasico, as it's called, of course, in this country. No, it's El Clasico between Real Madrid and Barcelona. And I think this, even though, of course, Real Madrid are 15 points ahead in the table, Barcelona is not going to catch them. I still think it's kind of an interesting game because I think in the last couple of weeks and months, we've seen Barcelona sort of gradually get their groove back a little bit and just kind of look like something approaching a good team again. And I think it's really interesting to see how Xavi handles this going to Madrid against the Madrid team that's been buoyed by their recent success against, you know, embarrassing celebrity outfit PSG. So I think this should be a lot of fun, and I think there should be goals. So I think it's all you want from a Sunday night.
El Clasico. And what are you going to eat with it?
So, like, obviously the answer is like cash and tapas, but like specifically the sort of salt cod fritters they do in Madrid in the bars. You have a beer and sort of the cod frittery thing. It's very, very nice.
Football Ramble Presents is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, mate.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.